Today's guest is Patty Phillips. I found Patty on Instagram and I immediately was attracted to her vibe. It's great to find people to connect with on that platform. I saw her feed, I saw what she was about, and I sent her a message randomly. She didn't know who I was and asked her if she'd be interested in being on my podcast. So we just spent 40 minutes having a wonderful conversation, and I would love to sit and have coffee with her, as I said to her after we were ended. And so maybe if I'm back in California and San Diego, I will do exactly that. But Patty is known as the queen of damn near everything. And that's her Instagram handle. She's an international author, stand-up comedian, blogger, realtor, entrepreneur, artist, mom, and all-around amazing person. And as she says, that's just the tip of the tiara. In fact, she was wearing a tiara that said Merry Christmas. And I loved it because it was pink while we were on the interview. So she is fun, fun, fun. She says she delights in helping midlife women in living a royal life. And she speaks to that. She also talks about her three marriages, husbands. I asked her for lessons learned. So that was very interesting. And she's engaged to be married to somebody. It sounds like she's learned her lessons from the past and she's applying them, and she has got a gem on her hands. So it sounds like a great guy, and that this one is going to stick. So join me in my interview with Patty. So let's get over to the episode now. Hi, I'm Laurie Wright, also known as Not Your Average Grandma. I created this podcast as a place to go for midlife inspiration. If you are in a stage where you believe the best is behind you, it is my hope that one of these episodes will ignite a long suppressed or unrealized desire, and you will see the potential within yourself just waiting to be tapped so you can do amazing things with the time you have left. I want you to stop seeing your age as a limitation and start seeing it as your superpower. You have years of experience and value that a younger you never had, so it's time to lean into that and use it to fuel your future. No more letting age hold you back from the pursuit of a more passion-filled life. The more passionate we are, the better the world will be. So stop settling for average, put your AirPods in, and let this episode inspire you to take the first step in transforming your mind, body, and soul. Welcome to another episode of Not Your Average Lives. And I have a special guest here today. Her name is Patty Phillips. I met her on Instagram. I guess I was stalking people that were interesting. I admit I was doing that. But she stood out because she is the queen of damn near everything. And who doesn't want to be that? I think most women are, but she is wearing a crown. And if you can't,
Christmas tiara right here.
Oh, it says Merry Christmas. Yes, it does. And it's pink too, I think.
Yeah, it's supposed to be red, but it's more on the pink side of red than red.
Well, obviously I like pink. So,
you know, I have happy birthday tiaras. I have them all.
Oh my gosh, that is so, so cute. I need a tiara. But anyways, I want you, are you just like, you sent the bio about your life and it was just so interesting. I love people who have done a lot. And I, number one, you're a comedian. And I was like, oh my gosh, you'll probably be funny. So I love to laugh. And you also talked about being so broke after one of your marriages ended. I don't know. I don't know how many you had.
After one of them.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's like the cast of the Ten Commandments. There's been a number.
Yes. Yes. And so I just want to hear your story. I want to know, let's start with kind of that mid, because you had a midlife at 51. That's what you said. And now you're 63, which she celebrates her age, which I'm 61 and we're the same like that. So I want to know kind of like what happened at that point, but also if there's more about your past that comes up in the conversation, sure. I'd love to touch on that as well.
Sure. Well, my last marriage, which was my third one, I was supposed to have been married in July, but thanks to COVID, we haven't done that. But my last marriage, which was my third marriage, I always refer in my comedy and everything, all my husbands have a name. I just say my first marriage was my first one because I was all of 16 when that happened. My second marriage was my kid's father because that he was the dad of my kids. And then my third marriage, I refer to him as the financial F up. I usually say the word, but I won't hear. So that's how we all refer to him as the financial screw up. So that was that. So in that
let me tell you, just to interrupt, yes. I've been married twice. So I'm on my second husband. They're both named Mike. So
how funny.
That's
how
so funny. Convenient.
Well, my one girlfriend years ago said, you always like have a description. I go, well, I can't just say my ex-husband because you don't know which one I'm talking about. So I have to have something that identifies. So anyway, when I was married to the financial screw up, it was one of those things where I kept thinking positive that, you know, we would get out of this financial hole. And the harder I dig, the it just got worse and worse. And I remember one year in real estate, because I was doing that very full time. I had worked over 100 days straight, 12 to 18 hour days, just trying to make money. I made $185,000 in commissions. And he hadn't paid his workman's comp insurance. One of his guys got hurt. I don't even think it happened on his job, but that's what he said. And we had to pay for three of his surgeries and his year off of work out of our pocket, or he would have lost his landscaping license. So that cost us about $200,000. So I worked 18
hours.
I take it
his business wasn't a moneymaker.
It was, but when you screw up to that, you know, I mean, he just was awful. If you can believe it, in one year, he had $35,000 in bounced check charges. Not so good. So when I finally decided that enough was enough and got out of that marriage, I walked away with six figures of debt in my name. And it was 2008, which was a really bad year for real estate.
Yes.
And I had no credit cards in my name, didn't have anything at all, and took his daughter with me because she wanted to come live with me. So I had to, you know, try to get out of all this. So when I did that, I just sat there and I thought, how did I end up here? You know, I'm like 50, just over 50 years old, 51 years old. And this is not a good place to be. So I thought, you know, I'm never going to do it again. So how do I never be in this position again, where I'm working literally day and night, had no extra money to do anything, laying awake, overdrawn accounts, wondering, you know, what I'm going to do. So I made a list of what I wanted in life. And I made a list of what I'd never have again in life. And it's funny because my life, immediately when I kind of took charge that way, it changed around. And even though it was a terrible real estate year, even though I was responsible for not only my own kids, but somebody else's, I realized in less than a year, I was in the car. I'd gotten this little Mitsubishi Eclipse convertible.
That was my daughter's first car.
Yeah, I love that car.
But it didn't have a convertible.
Oh, I love that car.
Yeah.
And I had traded in the mom van, you know, the minivan. And I was driving along one day with the top down and this country western song came on and it's called She Let Herself Go. And it had not quite been a year after I'd gotten out on my own. And it said she let herself go to New York City to a spa for a week, come in, drop dead pretty. And she'd gone to, what else was it? Honolulu. And I think Vegas, but everything in the song, I realized I'd done that year. I'd done every one of those things. Wow. I'd gone to Honolulu. I'd gone to Vegas. I'd gone to not a spa for a week, but I'd done a lot of, you know, going to the spa. And I realized my whole life was different. And so I thought, you know, if I can do this, other women can do it. And I see so many women where, you know, they put themselves last. They put the husband, the kids, their business, their house, their parents, their everything. And people started saying to me, oh my God, you live such a great life. You're so lucky. And you know what, Lori? I said, no, I'm not. I'm not lucky. I made this happen. I structured this to happen. And it's what I call living a royal life. You know, I go through the whole, the queen of damn near everything, but it's living a royal life and we can all do it. And, you know, you just have to decide that you are of worth. And you know that old saying, if mama ain't happy, ain't nobody happy. And so we have to take time. And I tell people, no, they go, I don't have time to do fun things. I go, you have to schedule it. Just like you schedule, if you're going to go to the gym and make it work out, you've got to schedule that. I used to tell young moms, I would speak to young moms and I'd say, you know, when you got little babies, rugrats running all around, if you don't schedule sex with your husband, it's not going to happen. Because by the end of the day, you're too darn tired. You have to make those things happen. And the fun, we have to schedule the fun. So I tell people, just decide whether it's once a month, once a week, whatever. This is my time. Tell the husband to deal with dinner himself. Tell him to handle the kids, whatever. Schedule it. You're worth it.
Yeah, I think women are just so used to being there for other people. And then their schedule gets filled and they say, I have nothing left for myself. So yeah. They put themselves last. Yeah. I'd be interested to know when you got the queen of damn near everything.
Interesting. Well, I already was doing comedy. I started doing comedy literally right after I got divorced. It was on my list of things I'd always wanted to do. Went and I tried it out. Went to one of the comedy clubs nearby, got into it, and I was going by the comedy queen. And so I hired a young millennial to help me in my office with all my, you know, I'm not a techie person, and it's all tough for me. I could never do a podcast because it would just never work.
It's very easy.
Not easy enough for me. So I hired this young millennial, and she was just a darling when she showed up for work. That was the problem. She didn't show up a whole lot, but when she did, she was great. And she said to me one day, she goes, I can't believe it. She goes, you do so many things. It was funny. I had put on a big T. Remember when Beauty and the Beast was out, the movie? So I had invited my girlfriends all over. We had a huge tea. And then we all went and we dressed. I had the bell gown, the whole hoop skirt, gold dress. And we all dressed like Beauty and the Beast. And we went to the movie afterwards. So I invited this young millennial that worked for me to come to the tea. And she comes rolling in about an hour and a half after the tea starts. And she goes, oh, I didn't know this was like a sit down. You had to be here at that time thing. Wow. She says, you know, I'm just so impressed. You do all this entertaining. You decorate. I go crazy obviously for Christmas. She goes, you do your comedy, you put on, you know, charity events. She goes, you're just like the queen of damn near everything. She goes, I mean, you just do everything really well. You ought to have a blog telling people about this stuff. So I went, well, that's a great idea. So I decided I'll start the blog and call myself the queen of damn near everything. So that's how it came about.
And so that was in about 2008, you did that?
No, I didn't start the blog until about 4 years ago, I think. About 3-4 years
ago. Yeah, that's so cool. Yeah. And so when did you want to, like, where did the wanting to be a comedian come from? Was that something from a childhood thing or?
You know, I was always a class clown. And many years ago, I was in Toastmasters and went through, you know, a couple of levels in the Toastmasters. I was called the Silver. And at one of our Christmas parties, we would kind of do like a little talent show thing. And I did comedy at that. And I always thought that was so much fun. And I always thought that would be fun to do. So then, like I said, I put it down, went to the comedy club nearby, and it went really well. And it was really funny because I enjoyed it. And, you know, it was just one of the, I'm blank on what they call it, but you just go and open mic night.
So open mic,
get,
yeah.
Yeah. You get, the number of minutes has to do with how many people show up. So I called, I said, how are my tickets? She goes, I've never seen anything like this. You have like 85 people coming. You've packed out the whole place. So I got the most minutes. I got like 10 minutes or something. But it was funny because I found out that comedy is kind of an old boys club because they said, oh, you can come back whenever you want. You're really good. But they would never give me the amount of minutes the guys got. And I was, I would never get the sweet spot that you're supposed to get. And I thought, I would like to have my own show. And I was thinking about how could I do that? I had this dream to have my own comedy show. And I was in Kiwanis and we were trying to figure out our fundraiser 1 year. And somebody in the club said, we've got what we need right in the club. Why don't we have Patty B do her comedy? And then we had a discussion because my comedy is not the cleanest. I have a real bad potty mouth and I'm not the cleanest. And one of my, my signature story is about my vagina. So
I want to hear it.
So they said, could we do that? And we said, yeah, we'll just tell people it's adult comedy. So I did that every year for our Kiwanis for like 8 years. Mm. And that's how I just started. So now I just, when life is normal, if it ever gets to again, I just do my own one woman shows. Mm-hmm. I do about an hour. I find a place that's got its own room that I can book. I get I get the people there and it's fun.
Just that's fun. Great. There's a lot of writing with comedy too.
A little bit, you know, for me, it's just weird stories of stuff. I've had such a bizarre life. You can't make up the stuff that's happened in my life, you know? So people go, where did you get your stories? I go, just my weirdness of life. That's my weird. I mean, one of my first jobs, Lori, that I tell about, and I think it's on YouTube. I think that story's up there, is my first job was, I was in the county fair and I was the Tora, the headless woman, the body beautiful. So I was the star of a freak show. That was one of my first jobs, $25 a day. So when one of your first jobs is the headless woman, it's all downhill from there.
Yeah. Do you watch, that just made me think of the Hugh Jackman movie. The greatest show.
Oh my God. That's one of my favorite movies.
The music is amazing from that.
I love it. You want to hear a funny story about that? Okay. I don't know why, but when I cook, I love to listen to that music. So about a year or two ago, I'm cooking for Christmas or Thanksgiving or something. And I'm in my kitchen and I'm like, Echo, play The Greatest Showman. So she plays it through and I say, repeat it. She plays it through. Third time I go, play The Greatest Showman. She goes, let me suggest something else for you. And she starts to play something else. I'm like, when I want you to think for me, I'll let you know. Right. I'm like, she goes, not. So Thanksgiving, I was trying to listen to it again. And Don was listening to something. So I said, let's change it to that. She stops when I tell her and she goes right back to what it was playing for Don. I said, no, I want you to play The Greatest Showman. She'd play one song and it would shut off. Echo doesn't like The Greatest Showman, but we do, Lori. We do.
Yes. I didn't know Echo was so, we call ours Echo too, not Alexa, but my husband said it's two syllables, not three. So tell me what, like, as a child, did you want to make people laugh? The backstories to me are fascinating about people. And like, did you have a parent that would egg you on?
No, not particularly, but I had a lot of report cards that came home that said, if only she didn't talk so much, you know,
and
the class clown, definitely, definitely. And you know, that came back to bite me in the butt because I remember we had a teacher who was such a nice man. In eighth grade, we had government and he had had polio and I would stand in the back and make fun. Oh my gosh. When I think back, if I had me as a teenager, I would have killed me. And I felt so bad. And I would go back to my hometown and God, karma bit me in the butt. Cause every time I'd go to town, I would not run into anybody else I knew, but I'd run into that teacher every darn time it seemed. And I would say, I am so sorry. I am so sorry. He'd say, no, you weren't that bad. I was like, oh no, I was really that bad. So karma bit me in the butt. Cause I apologized to that man every time I saw him, but
that's
got me a lot of laughs at the time, but not so nice.
Yeah. And society today is different. You know, I don't think we realize my dad used to make fun of people and he would name people things. Like he had next door neighbors and he called them the Blands because they were boring. Mm-hmm. You know, he named our cars. And so it was funny. Right. But then in hindsight and looking back, it's like, well, it's kind of mean, you know, some of the stuff.
And comedy has changed with that, even just in the short time I've done it, because I never do make fun of anybody. There's only one person I make fun of when I do comedy, it's myself. I will poke fun at myself all the time, but it's not, you know, now it's very, you can't say anything about any race or if somebody's overweight or even in secondhand. I was talking about myself that one of my last shows, we had just come back from Southeast Asia. And I was saying how I always bring back an outfit from wherever country we travel. Cause we travel a lot. I've been to 50 countries. And my man's been in 93. So
how did you meet? Finish that thought, but yeah.
How did we meet? Yeah, we'll go over that. But I just mentioned that I couldn't find an outfit in Vietnam because I go into stores and they look at me, they go, oh no, you're very big. No, nothing for you. Finally, I found one store and they had a 3X, but when I brought it home, I had to have it altered and let out 4 inches on each side. So at my show, I said, so in Vietnam, I'm probably about equivalent to about a 6X. Go figure. And there was a heavy woman in the crowd and she did not find that humorous. And I was not poking fun at her. I didn't say like, hey, sweetie, and you would have been probably a 15X. I was talking about myself, but even at that, she got offended. So you really, comedy is a different thing nowadays because people find a lot to get offended over.
Yeah. Yeah. Pushed her button.
Ooh.
So yeah, I'm curious about your love life. So So I, like, as I said, when we talked before I hit record, this is like an organic conversation. Yeah. So yeah. I know a lot of women our age are, sometimes their husband says, I'm done. And they're left alone with nobody. Yeah. So they're looking for love at late in life. I just drunk dialed my old boyfriend from college. So I was like, and he was still available. So I was like, that'll work. So that's,
oh my gosh. Yeah.
And we've been, very happily married for 11 years now. But so I'm curious, you know, are any of these old boyfriends that came back in the picture?
No, this is a funny story. My man, who is referred to by my girlfriends as Mr. Perfect and Wonderful, because he truly is, his name is Don. And the way we got together is I was engaged. This was after the financial screw up husband. And I had a few fun years running around. And then I was engaged to a gentleman, and he was a very nice looking man and treated me very nicely and all that. But I happened to meet Don because I was the president of Kiwanis, and he had been in Rotary and was looking for a different group because his ex-wife, he was going through a divorce. His ex-wife was still in the Rotary, and it was kind of awkward. So he contacted me, and we met for coffee to talk about our Kiwanis group. And my Kiwanis was kind of on its downward spiral. It was kind of, a lot of our members had left and left the earth and gone and, you know, all that, too old. So I said, I'm not going to be, I was 5 out of 10 years the president. I said, I'm not doing it anymore. So I told Don, I said, our group isn't the right one for you, maybe another one. So he said, well, let's just keep in touch and I'll figure out what I'm going to do. So we had a couple text or emails, just how you doing. So I was thinking about my engagement, and although my fiance was a nice guy and we got along well, I just didn't feel he had a great passion for me. I could have literally said to him, I'm taking a worldwide trip around the world for 8 months and I'll be back. He'd say, okay, see you, bye. That'd be it. You know, he might've given me a little peck on the cheek, but that was about it. And I just thought, you know, I need more than this. So I'd been thinking about it, and I'd written him a letter to say, I don't think this is going to work. But I wondered if I was the one that was wrong. Like, everybody said, oh, you're so lucky, he's such a great guy. And I thought, is it me? Is something wrong with me? So I kind of just held onto the letter, and I hadn't told anybody that I was thinking of breaking up. And then my daughter and I had a talk, and I told my daughter, I hadn't even told my best friends. My daughter and I talked, she goes, I thought you were really in love with him. I said, I am in love with him, but I don't think it's enough. She goes, well, Mom, how could it not be enough? Like, what do you want? I go, I just want more. I deserve more. You know, my daughter was in a wedding. He didn't want to come to the wedding with me. A friend of mine died. He didn't come to the funeral. And I thought,
yeah,
what's the point?
Your gut was telling you something.
Yeah. And he just didn't care. I mean, I could go off with girlfriend 6 nights a week. He didn't care. And I don't want a man attached to the hip, but I'd like him to care that I'm there sometimes. So anyway, long and short, I ran into Don out and about, and I said, how are you doing? He says, oh, my divorce is, you know, just about final. And how are you? And I looked at him, I said, I think I'm breaking up with Jeff. And I couldn't believe it came out with my mouth. I'm like, I can't believe I said that. And he goes, well, can we go out? And I said, I think I ought to tell, we were living together. So I said, I think that I ought to tell him first and be respectful. And I think he probably needs to not be living in my house. So he goes, well, whenever that happens, let me know. I said, okay, I haven't even told him yet. So I gave him the letter like a couple days later. And that was on a Sunday. And on Wednesday, he moved out. So on
and he Thursday, was like, okay.
He just was like, oh, yay, packed his stuff up and moved out. Not even like a fight. So I think that it was just convenient. You know, it's all it was for him. So so I texted Don and I said, he's gone. And he goes, how about dinner Saturday night? So we went out to dinner. And at dinner, we started talking about travel. And we were talking about places we've traveled. And I said to him, where's your favorite place you've ever traveled? And he said, the next place that I go. And I went, oh, this is the man for me.
Oh my gosh. It just gave me chills.
Yeah.
I love that.
This is the man for me. And
an adventurer.
Oh yeah. I mean, he's traveled, like his family was letting him travel. He was in England alone when he was 13 for a couple of days. He'd come back from a Boy Scout roundabout in Japan, traveled to England, and his parents showed up like 3 days later and he was there alone at 13. So he's traveled a lot. So it just right away, I was like, this is the guy for me. And that was it. People go, like, the fiance one was here and what happened? What, how? And that was just it. And he really is the perfect man for me.
And how long have you guys been together? You said you're engaged, so.
Yeah, we're engaged. We got engaged last December 4th, and we were supposed to get married in July, but it was supposed to happen back in the Midwest so we could be by my family, so that didn't happen. But we've been together 4.5 years.
Wow. Yeah. This might stick.
It might.
Yeah. Are you guys similar in age, too?
Oh, yeah. He's just a year older than me. Perfect. Not even 4 years. Just over 6 months older.
And I suppose he loves your sketch about your vagina.
Oh yeah. People go, does that embarrass you? And I tell it and he's like, just what it is. It's just,
yeah. Yeah. I love it. Cause I mean, I like to be open about you know, just anything. I mean, sometimes I'm like, did I really say that? But it's all in jest and fun. Right. Did you remember what was the movie with, and Kathy, what's her face was in it? Fried green tomatoes. Yes. When they did the mirror looking at their,
remember they went all about that.
Yes. Yes. And they all had to look at their vaginas.
Oh my gosh. I totally forgot about that. I have been, saying we need to watch that movie again because we've been, you know, I've never been a TV watcher, but now every night we watch like some movie cause we're here. So now I've learned to paint while we watch TV because I've just never been home long enough to watch TV, but that's when we need to watch. My favorite scene there is where she runs into the car, the girl takes her parking spot and she says, hey, you know, because the girl says, that's what you do when you're young and fast. And she goes, that's what you can do when you're old and you have insurance.
Yeah. Yeah. And I think she had a nickname for herself too. She was like, that was her alter ego.
Tawanda, right? Or something.
Well, yeah. Tawanda? Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. That's a great movie. Yeah. It's so fun.
Yeah. So fun.
Well, you know, it's funny because I used to have a humor column in our local paper years ago when my kids were tiny, tiny. So like 25, 30 years ago. And in it, I told this story about my daughter and my girlfriend said, I can't believe you put this because I told the story about I was in blow drying my hair once when my daughter was like 2 and and people would always make a big deal because my daughter's blonde and her hair was kind of curly when she was younger and she had dimples. So people would always make a big deal about her dimples, say, oh, like it makes me think of Shirley Temple and this and that. So one day when I was blowing my hair dry, she comes running in and she stops and she looks at me and she goes, mommy, are those things on your bottom called dimples? And I kind of stopped for a minute and I looked, I said, yeah, I guess you could say that. She says, oh, then you're so lucky because you have so many of them. And I told that story in this humor column I used to have. And I called it dimples don't always mean you're smiling. And I said, you know, beauty lies in the eyes of the beholder. And I said, my daughter probably is thinking, they make a big deal out of these 2 little dimples. People ought to see my mom's bottom. It's like her best feature. If these are great, you know?
Yeah. Yeah. My dimples have turned into wrinkles. I call them dinkles. Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah. So did I hear you say you paint too?
I do. Yeah, I do.
And was that something you did?
I've gotten a lot, you know, COVID's taught me a lot. You know how for many years I kept saying, the reason that I'm not very organized, because my sisters are all very organized. I'm like the busiest person you know in normal life. I'm usually president of, you know, 75 organizations and this and that. And I used to think if I had more time, I'd be more organized. Well, COVID has proved me a liar because nothing is any more organized than it was 10 months ago. Nothing. I tried for the first week of COVID, but it all went back to its norm. So everything is still a mess. But one thing I always said is if I had more time, I have a whole craft room that we bought this house partly because of that. And I thought I would use that craft more. And I've gotten really into a lot more mixed media. And I just picked up watercoloring about, I don't know, 4 or 5 months ago during this. So I do watercolors at night. Don actually just bought me a desk. It's not attractive in my family room that can be wheeled because I had my broken ankle recently. So we could wheel the table because he has a bad back. It was the walking wounded here. So I wheel it over and I sit on the couch and I do my watercolor at night.
That's so neat. What kind do you do? Just like scenes, like landscapes?
I've just been doing note cards and sending people little packs of note cards. So I do flowers and I did some Christmas little things and stuff like that. Just easy. And then I'm doing some pictures also. But so I took a couple classes from a gal that I know who's an amazing artist.
So that's nothing that you really did up until you were older.
No. When I was a child, my mom put me in every kind of craft class there was because I loved it. So I, you know, as a young kid, I tried everything, but I had not really done painting of that. I'd been doing some acrylic painting, but not the watercolor.
And so I'm just trying to put my brain in the brain of our listeners. And what comes up for me is that, oh, she seems so multi-talented. She knows so many different things, but it seems like you just decided to do something, had an interest in it, and figured out, learned how to do it. It's not any like special gift that you had.
Yeah, no, you know what? I have this innate thing of, I always just think I can do that. I always think I can do anything. When I see something, I think, well, that's not such a big deal. I can do it. And sometimes I can't do it quite as well as I think I can, but I just always am like, yeah, I can do that. And so I just decided to do the, you know, I mean, technically I'm not real, you know, a lot of people talk about the, you know, the highlights and the, where's the sun coming? I just paint. It's like, if it's not technically right, or I just make up these flowers in my head and they're not like maybe a real flower that exists, but I don't care.
That's neat. My daughter has a talent for it. And so she does, like, she did a painting of our house and I was mm-hmm. like, oh my gosh, I would love to be able to do that. And she, I don't think she's really had many, I didn't send her to any kind of art school. So it's just all something self-developed. And
yeah, I just started teaching classes. Actually, there's a thing out near us that's really cool. It's called the Betty Crocker House, and it's about 40 minutes from here out in the country. And it's the house where they filmed the Betty Crocker cookbook lady baking. And the house is like 100 years old, which you don't see that here in Southern California. But this young couple bought it and they've made this cool thing. There's a big barn with antiques, and once a month they have vendors and then teaches classes. So out behind the house by the pool, I've taught a couple. I did a succulent. Have you ever seen those succulent pumpkins where you put the succulents on?
I don't think so.
Oh, they're beautiful. You just literally glue succulents on top of a pumpkin. Mine's still sitting up on my pool. They'll last till summertime, till the pumpkin rots. So I did that class, and then I did a watercolor card class there. So that's fun.
Yeah, that sounds like great activities.
Yeah, I love doing
stuff. And then you have a book, right?
I have a book that came out a year ago in October. It's one of those compilation books. It's called Light at the End of the Funnel. And it is about, I think about 35 or so people, women talking about business and what kind of was the light at the end of the tunnel for them thing. And so I have that became an international bestseller. I right now have a book that a gal is illustrating, a children's book. My best friend's name is Stella. And Stella is very blingy, like I like bling. And so I made her this very special umbrella a few years ago. And we were laughing about Stella's umbrella. So that's now the name of my children's book, Stella's Umbrella. So
that's amazing.
Yeah, it's being illustrated. And then I'm also working on a book called It's Not Easy Being Queen, you know, stories about just silly stories about my life. And then I was working on another book, but with COVID, I put it on the back burner about living a royal life and just how you can do that. But with COVID, I thought a lot of people right now are thinking, hey, I can't do that. So I'm kind of put that. So I've been working on the other stuff.
Yeah. And so one of the things you said is you what you try to do is motivate, inspire women to live a royal life. How do you really do that? Just by showing up and
showing up, encouraging, make them realize that, you know, you can do it. You can make those changes. You know, a lot of people I know, one gal, for instance, in business, known her for probably 15 years through business. And every time I've ever seen her, we had lunch. All she does is complain about her husband and how she can't stand him. She can't stand her life. I'm like, what are you waiting for? I'm scared. I'm like, and what's the worst that's going to happen? What is the worst that's going to happen to you? I walked away, you know, six figures in debt without a credit card to my name, the worst year for my industry. I lived, you know, I lived and I flourished. So I try to make women realize they can do it. They are worth putting themselves first. They need to make time for themselves and they need to have fun. Fun is so important and so many people don't do it.
Yeah. Yeah. And if you're miserable, you're not living an aligned life with what you're meant to do. So you're just staying stuck. I totally agree. What I felt like, so I left my 25-year marriage when I was 47, and what the frame of mind I had, or I, when I look back, I think about this, I think I would have been fine if that separation brought us back together. Uh-huh. But that separation needed to happen for us to grow in the way we needed to grow. And so, you know, never say never, right? If you say, it's just speaking up and saying, I'm not happy and I'm out of here, is going to wake somebody up and they might totally change. You don't know, but you learn a lot when you're apart, and maybe that learning and that knowledge that you find will actually bring you back and bring you closer together. But if you're not happy, that person isn't happy.
And you know what? If we haven't learned anything through COVID, I think we've all learned tomorrow's not promised. And you know, my mom died at 56. She had cancer for 8.5 years.
Wow.
And she was told she would live 3 months when they found it. She lived 8.5 years. But you know, she was a fighter. But I've outlived her by a number of years, and you just don't know. So to wait, you know, I'm gonna wait until whatever, the kids go, or I'm gonna wait until this happens, or I'm gonna wait till that happens. And you know, when I walked out the door, Lori, I didn't know, my credit was like in the low 400s. And I thought, who's gonna ever even rent to me? And it was a total God thing that happened. It was like just a fluke that I even got a place to live. But the whole thing, you know, it just happened, and it was meant to happen, and I flourished. So, you know, I've never looked back, and I, you know.
Yes, I think that women who have stories like yours, they're meant to be shared because they're going to help other people. So I appreciate you being open and honest about it. I would love to know, as we wind it down, I would love to know what you've learned from your different marriages.
Oh, what I've learned. Okay. The first marriage, I learned nobody should get married at 16. That was the first one.
And what made that happen?
You know, my mom had just found out she had cancer. I was dating this boy, which I, you know, I shouldn't even have been allowed to date when we got together. I was dating this boy. And of course you think you're head over heels in love, and you know everything when you're that age. And I wanted to get married. I had actually gotten pregnant, but the baby had been stillborn. So there was no real need to go forward with marriage. But I think my mom was, like I said, told she was going to die in a couple months. She wanted to feel like I'd have somebody. My dad wasn't really in the picture at that point. And so she allowed it. So, you know, when my kids would do stuff, they said, well, you got married at 16. I said, had she not gone and signed those papers by 18, when I could legally do it, it would have been done. So what I learned with that is the adults need to say no.
Yes.
We're adults for a reason.
Yeah. So, I got married just to add on to that, I got married when I was 22, and I still think that's too young. And I admire kids today who wait. And I think, you know, you change so much in your 20s.
Oh, yeah. I 100% agree. I always kid that when I'm president, nobody's allowed to get married until they're 30. Minimum. So my second marriage was interesting because I was 22 years old. I was living in Hawaii. I just moved there about 4 or 5 months before. People thought I was quite the rebel to move out of Illinois to Hawaii. And I met my kid's dad there in a bar, and he was 44. So he was twice my age, and he'd already had 7 kids. And I came here to California to visit him and never went back. And so when I got married, I was a grandma to 3 kids at 22. That called me Grandma Patty. I had all these kids and 3 teenagers that moved. We moved for them to go to school where they did. And that was, oh my God, it was horrible. I don't recommend that to anybody. It was tough. And
is a good comedy sketch.
Oh my gosh. We were married for 22 years. It was quite the thing. Yeah. We'd be out and you'd see people go grandma, and then they go mom. And then and you'd see people going, trying to put all the, like, look at him, look at me. Yeah. So 22 years in that marriage. And then I took care of him literally till the day he died, but we were not married at that point. And then the third marriage is, you know, when the red flags come up in a marriage or beforehand, don't ignore them. There was red flags, and I just, you know, chose to look at what I wanted to see. And you know, I never regret, people go, do you regret this or regret that? And I don't regret it because my stepdaughter had never had a mom. Her mom had died when she was still in the hospital with a brain aneurysm the day after Katie was born.
Oh.
So I came into Katie's life when she was 9.5. I don't think her hair much had ever been brushed and this and that. And she says to this day, she goes, mom, if you hadn't come into my life, she goes, I'd either be dead or I would have been in a gang. They were living in a bad neighborhood. I'd have been in a gang. I'd be in prison, or I'd be dead. There'd be no other outcome to my life. So as you taught me everything I need to know about being a girl. And so I have no regrets about that marriage because, you know, I have Katie and, you know, and she has me and that's that. So, you know,
it's amazing. I love that. I love that. You know, and I always like to look at what we've learned and the lessons that we've gotten along the way. It sounds like you're going into this next one with wide open eyes. And I love that you went with your gut. More people need to do that. Listen to the gut.
I'm really lucky. We both feel like we're really lucky that we found each other. And, you know, if being together 24/7 during COVID.
Oh, I know. You know,
and now we have my daughter. I never thought I was always the empty nester who was like, oh, that's great. Go on your life and have a great life. I mean, I love my kids and I love to be in a mom with no kids at home. And I thought I'd never have one of the kids come home. And she was living in LA when COVID happened. And I said, come, cause I don't know what's going to happen in LA. So then Don had said, if she needs to move in with us full time, it's fine. I'm like, oh, I don't think you need that. And then turned out she lost her job. The roommates lost their jobs. She's been here and it's been great. So if we still get along like this with a new roommate and a dog now and each other 24/7, I think it's all good.
Yes. Yeah. She's a lucky girl to have you. So what are the last words you want to leave the listeners with? I so appreciate you coming on here with me, my message on Instagram.
Oh, I'm so glad. You know, the Living a Royal Life, I have a little thing. If they go to my website, they can ask for my list of 10 ways that you can start to live a royal life. And I'd be happy to give that to them. And just, you know, find the fun in life and make time for yourself because you're worth it.
Yes. Yes. I feel that the second half can be better. So I strive to, like my 50s were my best decade.
Yeah.
And so I was determined when I got to 60 that this is going to be even better. It's going to keep getting better.
Yes.
Yeah. Yeah. So thanks so much for being here. And
thank you so much.
Yeah. It's great talking.
I appreciate it.
Thank you so much for tuning into the Not Your Average Lives podcast. If you haven't yet, make sure to subscribe on iTunes if you have an Apple device. You can find free resources and learn what else I have going on at the moment that might interest you on my website at notyouraveragegrandma.com. You can also find me on Instagram or Facebook at Not Your Average Grandma. If you liked this episode, it would make my heart so happy if you could leave me a 5-star rating. You can also add a review to let me know what you like about this podcast, which will help spread the word about it to others who need a little midlife inspiration. As always, be you, listen to your inner voice, and focus on reigniting that lost spark so you can start living your own, not your average, life.